Hello and welcome to Rewind Reviews, the podcast where we take a look back at things that we enjoyed in our youth and find out if they're still any good. But occasionally, when we've done a movie, we then take a look at its sequel. Now, we haven't had a lot of legacy sequels turn up on here. I think we did Crystal Skull. That counts as a legacy sequel. How many more have we done? We did the more modern Harry Potter films in the bonus episodes, which do count. They have to count, because otherwise I suffered for nothing. I'm trying to think what else we've done.
They count.
Yeah.
I don't think so, no.
So not a huge number
not like
legacy ones.
Not a huge number of not a huge number of films, you know, within the last 10 years, but there's been some.
Yeah, because we did the more modern Pirates films, which I think the latest one of those is like 2017, I think, was the most recent one of those. So like, yeah, so we've dabbled in this area, but this is our season of sequels, sequel season, baby. Whoop whoop. And Chris decided to punish us for this choice.
Well, I thought it was an interesting discussion. I'm not sure how long a discussion it will be, but it is. I maintain that it's an interesting discussion, because I don't think it's bad for a lot of the reasons people say it's bad. It is still bad, but yeah, we'll talk about it. I'm intrigued to talk me through your journey, because, you know, we've done our history with Dumb and Dumber. You haven't seen this film, is that correct?
That is right. Yeah, that is right.
I've watched it one random day, saw it on Sky. Felt very much the way watching this, forgotten. I remembered the initial part of watching it. Yep. And then as the movie went on, I was like, oh, I remember why. Because, you know, we'll talk about it. But what was your experience? Talk us through your journey watching Dumb and Dumber 2.
Yeah. I mean,
would you feel the need to recap? Harry and Lloyd are back, and they're still the same.
Yeah, the plot of the movie is the same as well, which is interesting. So we look back at Dumb and Dumber, a film we both loved in our youth. Now, it's worth noting, obviously, Dumb and Dumber contains a lot of fairly juvenile humour. So it makes a lot of sense that even though it wasn't appropriate for young Chris and Dan to have watched that movie, we did, and we enjoyed it, right? Adult Chris and Dan stumble across that movie as part of Rewind Reviews in our ongoing experiment to check, is that any good? And the answer was no. It was not good. I don't think either of us particularly appreciated the original Dumb and Dumber. I think we found some things in it that were elements that were good or worked, such as the performances and little bits and bobs of jokes that come together okay, if you know, for the stuff that doesn't. The hit rate was pretty poor. We also had some issues with how it aged in terms of some of the more problematic content, but we did give it it was the 90s pass, which is a little pass. You give any movie from the 90s and you go, you're probably going to be weirdly homophobic, because that was just apparently in vogue at the time. And some of the, you know, stuff that we didn't particularly like. But taste changes, and I think it'd be wrong of us not to acknowledge that. So I sit down to watch the second one with this in mind and going, God, well, they made this in what, 2015? 2014? It's about 10 years old, this movie. Times had moved on. And maybe so had the sensibilities of those making the movie. And maybe, just maybe, Chris, we were going to get a Dumb and Dumber movie for the modern age. The other option was to just do the same thing again. And they went the second way. They went very much the second way. This was a fucking nightmare. This was an actual living nightmare to sit through this film. Every element of it, painful, forced, just saying the sentences from the first movie as if that was a thing, like as if that was substance. I like it a lot. Oh, cool, you said the thing. Good. What an embarrassment this is to everyone involved. And what's really a shame is I respect so many of the people involved in this movie. So Jim Carrey remains a comic genius. And I think it's interesting that he doesn't like this movie. And he's been very vocal about not thinking this movie turned out well. Jeff Daniels is a fucking Emmy Award winning actor who is capable of some of, you know, has done some of the best dramatic acting we've seen on television in the last couple of decades. Like, The Newsroom is a masterpiece, right? So let's, you know, we can't discount Jeff Daniels' talent. And I've, and for what anyone wants to tell about the Farrelly brothers, they've had a career. Like, you can't deny the success. And I must admit, I've got slight soft spot for Peter, particularly as I've met him, and he was like super nice. Like, he was like the nicest guy. So like, I don't want to come at this from the cynical perspective of this was everyone cashing a check. But let me tell you, I would find it hard to look someone straight in the eyes and tell them I didn't think this movie was a cynical cash grab. That's how bad this movie is. It felt like they all went, the studio will chuck us a bunch of money to just do Dumb and Dumber again. So let's do that. It's painful from top to bottom. And we'll get into why shortly. There are so few redeeming qualities to this movie. There are a couple we'll talk about, but dear Lord. And I can't even really say the performances, because let me tell you, like, even the when these guys were on form in that first movie, and this movie, I don't know, were they just thinking of the money? Were they distracted at the thought of the money being delivered and dumped on their front lawn? And I'm not even sure how much they were paid for this, because it doesn't even seem like it was a high-budget film. So, yeah, I don't know. I baffled. Absolutely baffled, Chris. What an exhausting experience it was. was your experience similar? I don't know. I'm baffled.
I think Jeff Daniels was having a good time. I you know, you can, and there's an interview where Jim Carrey, I think, crashes his appearance on some talk show, and they're talking about their chemistry, and Jim Carrey goes, even Dumb and Dumber 2, we had fun, you know, it wasn't particularly critically received, and Jeff Daniels just goes, oh, fuck them. Like, and I think Jeff Daniels might have had a good time in this, and I don't think especially the physical comedy, you know, that man is throwing himself around and stuff, and really committing. So I think Jeff Daniels is probably the standout performance. I think the thing for me is I'm watching this movie and I said last week in the reasons for choosing it, in the first 20, 25 minutes, I'm going, I think I'm right in my original thesis. This is truly a sequel to Dumb and Dumber. Now, Dumb and Dumber didn't age well. You and I, like you say, didn't like it particularly on reflection. So I'm not saying that's a good thing. Something different would have been better. Yeah. But it's very tonally similar. It's very, a lot of the gags are very similar. Some of the gags were quite funny in that first half an hour. They made me laugh. You mean the motorcycle accident? I thought he pulled through. The obituary said he was survived by his parents. Like, I think that's a funny gag. Like, that made me laugh. There's a gag in which we see a bit of a travelling montage and they go back to where they started because they're looking at the wrong side of the envelope. Again, that made me laugh. And so I'm watching this movie and I'm like, okay, like, you know, it's truly a sequel to Dumb and Dumber. That's, you know, that can't be denied. In the way that Good Burger 2 is truly a sequel to Good Burger. And I'm sat there watching it going, if this had come out sooner, if this had come out like a couple of years after the first one, I don't think it would be as beloved, but I don't think it would have been critically, this is the first half an hour, I remember, as critically mauled. And then it goes on, and I'm like, oh, it's okay, it's getting a bit, you know, it's not as funny now, it's a bit long, and da da da, and then some of the humour gets, like, the gross out gets amped up, and then towards the very end, there's just, like, sexist, racist shit, and you're like, oh, God. The bit that really, for me, where I was like, oh, we've fallen off a cliff now, is there's another travelling montage, and in it, just really, it felt like the first half an hour or so was a Dumb and Dumber sequel. And then there's a travelling montage, and I'm like, oh, you've gone full-blown trying to copy the comedies that have come in between. Like, there's a bit where they take a shower by a toxic wasting, and then we see them travelling again, on this snow, I don't know what it is, party thing that they're traveling on.
The Zamboni?
And they're green. Huh?
The Zamboni?
The Zamboni. And they're green. They're glowing green because of the toxic waste. And in that whole montage, there's just a bunch of stuff which is kind of that, you know Anchorman, where the fight scene, which is obviously this classic scene, which they replicate in two as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the gag is like people just keep turning up, and they keep turning up and keep turning up and keep turning up, and like the geography of where everyone is begins to just make no sense, and you just can't work out like where everyone is, and that sort of, you know, that that really kind of super fantasy style comedy humor of just where just like it's not grounded in logistics. And this montage does that. And I'm like, well, now it doesn't feel like Dumb and Dumber. Like, now it feels like they're trying to replicate the style of other comedies. And then the third act is just dull. It's just really boring and long. And I'm like, oh, I remember why I felt this was a true Dumb and Dumber sequel. Because very much for the first bit it is. But I also remember now why I never recommended it to anyone. Like, why I never said, oh, check it out, it's not as bad as you think. Because that final act in particular is as bad as you think. It's really badly done, and it's not good, and it's way, way too long. At one point, like, the movie feels like it's ramping up to a conclusion. They're at the place where they've been essentially heading towards for this road trip movie.
Mm-hmm.
The characters that the whole movie has been about them meeting have met, and I had to pause it last night for something, and I was like, what the fuck, we've still got half an hour to go on this movie. I think we had like 40 minutes to go. I was like, what the fuck, like, how is there not 10 minutes left of this movie? And so I still maintain that I think in the first kind of 20 minutes, half an hour, there are some amusing gags, and it feels like a Dumb and Dumber sequel. And then it just goes off a cliff towards the end of the second act, and definitely in the third act. And it's just a bad comedy movie at those points. Which is a shame, I think. If it had been that first half an hour all the way through, I still think it would have been criticized, but I think it would have been criticized unfairly, because like I saw it was a review, or it might have even been the Honest Trailer, I don't know, and something said, oh, they're back, but they're now really nasty and they're really mean spirited. And I was like, no, they were nasty and mean spirited in the first movie, yeah, as well. Like, yeah, that's you just not remembering it. And I think if the whole movie had been that first half an hour, and that first half an hour is bad, but it isn't bad for the reason people say it is. The first one is equally bad for that.
Yeah, but that is still a reason why this movie is bad, though. It is bad because it is mean-spirited. It is bad.
Yes, but it's unfair to say they've become mean-spirited, because they haven't become mean-spirited.
No,
they
were
that in the first one.
I understand that, but it is still a valid criticism of this movie, and I'll be honest with you, I think the first half an hour is absolute dog shit as well, if I'm being completely honest with you. He's pulling pulling the catheter out of him, and I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake. Like, it's just the whole idea that he did 20 years for a joke, and he had to wipe his shit up, and I'm just like, my head is in my hands. And then there's racist jokes in the first half an hour as well. The wrong time Harry, long time Harry thing is deeply shitty and offensive.
Yeah, that's fair.
I hate the kidney plot, and particularly the resolution of it. There are like 3 points in the entire movie I laughed, I think. One is from the trailer, so I don't mind spoiling this if anyone's seen the movie, although I don't see the movie, I'm not recommending it. I'm thoroughly not recommending it, and we are probably going to start spoiling stuff now, so maybe if you were just checking this to see if it was worth watching, the answer is no. The bit where he tries to ring the daughter, but the phone got left behind.
Mm.
So Lloyd picks it up, and he's like, and Harry's on one end of the phone going, hi, it's your dad. And he says, it's my dead dad. You know, that bit made me laugh. That's a really funny gag. It plays into how stupid they are. but it is also like it's sort of unexpected, and it's like a funny sequence of events that makes perfect sense and has occurred naturally, and they can be stupid, and that's great. I'm on board with that. I don't mind that at all. The other bit is the guy camouflage in the candy machine, because I genuinely didn't see him that time, and that really caught me out, and I laughed quite a lot at that. The other bit that I really liked, and I'm starting to do some positives. I really loved the moment in the, I think it's the first travel montage, where he's making the kids scared because he's in the back of the hearse and looking like a zombie, and then he reveals it's a donut, and the kids end up laughing. And he's laughing. And I thought, that's what this, a modern version of this needs. Now, it wouldn't be a sequel to Dumb and Dumber if you did this. But a version of Dumb and Dumber that's almost like a reboot with two new characters. They're dumb, but in a much more lovable, less cynical, less hateful, less punching down sort of way. Then you might be able to salvage this concept for a modern audience. But I'm sitting there listening to him be disgustingly attracted to a child, and then when he says you know, go out with someone your own age, he's going, no, gross. And I know that the movie isn't saying that's good. I know that they're the rubes, that they are not supposed to agree with them, you're not supposed to be on their side. I understand that, but it is muddled because the movie then kind of makes them the heroes, right? They save the day. So it's like the movie is both admonishing the behavior and then sort of making them the heroes at the same time, and it's very muddled. It's the same problem the first movie had, I think. And I just think the whole thing, the whole movie feels spiteful, mean-spirited, and cruel. And the only moment that shines through that isn't that is that one tiny fraction of a moment where he like makes the kids laugh at the back of the car, and I clung to that. I was like, that's glorious. Like they there's a nugget of the way they should have done this in there. And obviously the downside is if you really lean into that, then it's not a Dumb and Dumber sequel, you know, it's a Dumb and Dumber reimagining. Yeah. But is there not a world where we could never mind the Buzzcocks modern reboot, where we're just accepting it's going to be different? Because for those who aren't aware, Nevermind the Buzzcocks is a sort of a panel show in the UK, and the original version of it, which, you know, still in that era of it being okay to punch down, always be insulting people, like sort of that mean-spirited, cynical comedy that just has faded away, thankfully, from our world. And the modern version of the show, very deliberately, is not that. They will still make fun of each other in a much more good-natured way, but it is a much, much nicer show to experience. They have updated it for a modern comedy sensibility. And I cannot help but wonder if they'd have been able to get away with that here. Would it have still felt like a Dumb and Dumber movie? Maybe not. But would it have been a better movie? I think so. So I 100% think understand where those criticisms come from. Maybe not phrasing it that way, as if the first one wasn't like that. Yeah, 100%. But it is an absolutely valid reason to think this movie is a big piece of shit, in my opinion.
I think they could have gotten away with it, because I think a lot of the commentary around this movie proves that people don't really remember the first one. they're nostalgia blind, maybe, or whatever.
I would agree.
Or it's so iconic, you know, people have been repeating some of these lines and stuff for 30 years, that people just people have forgotten that what that first movie was, or that it was as mean-spirited as it is. So yeah, I think they probably could have got away with doing it that way.
Yeah, and I think that there's something to be said as well about like lovable idiots, you know, almost getting it right by getting it wrong, like you know, blundering their way sort of through a situation without realizing it. Because the first one had a few elements of this as well, where like people thought they might be geniuses, like, you know, you remember those guys are trying to track them down in the first one because they've got the suitcase full of money, and they think they're some sort of like stealth geniuses because they keep it acting in sort of erratic ways that make them hard to track down and follow. Like, this movie could have lent more into that stuff, because I think that's some of the stuff that's less mean-spirited that worked really well in the first movie. It's the first movie. I have a lot more, even though I didn't care for the first movie on rewatch, I still came away from that, from watching that, with a larger number of positives than with this one, because I still think that stuff really works, and they come close to it. There's a little hint of it, like that Travis character's demise is very much them blundering their way into getting out of a sticky situation without even knowing they were in it. And it's so perfect the way they do that, actually. It's the one of the other moments that came kind of close to laughing was they were, when they turn around and he's gone and we know he's been smushed by the train and they're just like... He took the car! Like, that made me laugh. Because I was like, okay, that's a good idea. That's a good premise. Like, they just think he bottled off with the car, which again is sort of a natural, less forced version of what they were doing. And but it is, even then, though, it's still a repeat of the joke from the first one, where that thug gets on the journey with them, right? And then they end up driving him insane until he ends up dead, you know, because they accidentally poison him, you know, in the first one. Here he gets hit by a train. Yeah. I don't know, man. There's so much repetitive stuff from the first movie as well. That's what drove me. That's really what drove me mad. And I'll tell you what's funny is they came really close to doing the other thing they should have done. There's one other moment I will say a positive for before I pretty much am out of positives, unfortunately. It's the dog van. I love what they did with the dog van in this. It was a perfect gag at the expense of all of the movies giving crazy reverence to things that were just goofs in the original. Like... Ghostbusters Afterlife shouldn't have been able to exist following this movie, because what this movie did was go, look, it's the dog car from the first movie. Reverence, reverence. Oh, it's shit. We've crashed it. We're moving on. There. You saw it? You saw the thing you wanted to see? We're moving on. Like, that's genius. It's not... It's one of very few moments of that in this film.
Yeah, and it shows, and even the little touch on that moment that I liked was him going, I kind of recognise this. Hold on, yeah, I sold it to a guy here. I'm like, they are at least trying to make sense. Like the whole kind of repeating stuff from previous movies. I think I watched Council of Geeks react to the Ghostbusters Frozen Empire trailer,
yes.
Which from the point of view of recording this isn't out yet.
Yes.
The film isn't out, but the trailer's out.
For listeners, we're on the 1st of February. We can make this a real time capsule by saying right now Republicans are mad at Taylor Swift. That's where we're at right now.
Are they really?
I didn't know that.
They're all mad at Taylor
Swift. Because don't you know, Chris, it's a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy. They've positioned her, the Democrats have made it, so she's going out with a football player that's playing in the Super Bowl, right? So that she can go to the Super Bowl, then his team can win, because it's fixed for the Democrats. And then when they win, she wins really though, because then she's going to go on national television during the Super Bowl and endorse Biden. You're aware of this. It's a massive conspiracy, Chris. It's incredible.
Wow.
I know. But these people are mentally ill.
Right.
Like, I can't express how ill you'd have to believe any of that. But anyway.
So Council of Geeks. I have nothing to add to that.
I know. I think Seth, from commenting. Seth Meyers absolutely nailed it when he was like, the fact that you think a team that has been in three of the last four Super Bowls has been fixed to get there, like, is delusional and proves you don't even understand football. Which made me chuckle. So yeah, there you go. A little time capsule, everyone. So, you know, in four months' time, when this gets released, you're all going, oh yeah, do you remember that near the Super Bowl, when all the Republicans were, their flavour of the week was to be mad at Taylor Swift and not the green M&M.
So there's a scene in that trailer where, and I'm not as familiar, I don't know, I think she was the receptionist or something in the first film. She's the one in uniform. What's her name?
Sorry, I'm not sure who you're referring to. So this is in what scene, sorry?
She answers the phone, basically, that character. I don't know her name. What's the name of the character?
Oh, Janine from Ghostbusters. Sorry, I forgot we moved Janine. On. We were on. I was honestly thinking about Dumb and Dumber. I was like, who answers the phone? Janine. Yeah, sorry.
No, I'm making the point about nostalgia.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
Janine answers the phone and she says, what's the line? It's an iconic line from the first movie.
It's like, you're through to Ghostbusters, what do you want? Something like that. It's like one of those sort of...
Yeah, that's
like,
it. Yeah. Ghostbusters, what do you want?
Yeah, yeah.
And Council of the Geeks made a great point when watching the trailer, because he didn't like the trailer, and he was like, the thing about that kind of nostalgia is, he says, it's not like that was a line she just said in the first film. In the first film, there's the context of Peter's really wound her up and got her pissed off, and so she's snapping the phone up and saying that line. He was like, and there might be context here. They might replicate something similar here.
Sure.
Sure. But it doesn't look like that. Right. It looks like she's picking it up and she's saying it because she said it before. And I think, and this film is full of moments like that as well. And I think it's a really good point of sometimes the problem with replicating stuff like that is, unlike the Mutz thing here, you're not doing something new with it. You're just literally, sometimes it is literally, remember berries. It's literally, remember this? Yep, we're going to say it again. And it's like, yes, but it's not as impactful if it's not contextualized because there is no context to it. The context is, well, they said it before and they're saying it again.
Right, and that's what I think is really interesting in this film is because for them to do the joke where they undercut the nostalgia, big reverent reveal of the truck, what's it called? The van from the first one, right? And it hits the big ramp and it goes up into the air and it's slow motion. It's like reverence, memory, and then it crashes immediately. And it's like, for a script to be sharp enough to do that and undercut, the joke isn't the car still in the movie. The joke is that they bring it out only to destroy it seconds later and they just move on.
Well, that's sort of the meta joke of it. The actual joke, the way the joke plays in the movie as well,
right,
is that it plays as they've got this van back. It's going to be their savior. They've stole it. They're on their way. They're back on the road, and immediately it breaks down.
Yeah, right. Which is it's a perfect joke because for this sort of thing, it's one of the better things in the movie. Like I said, it was one of my last compliments of it. But then the movie, it's like two different people like wrote this script separately, or three people actually wrote the script, it turns out. Peter Farrelly, Sean Anders, and John Morris. I don't know who wrote what, but to have, you know, later in the movie, those kinds of references, like I like it a lot, you know, that sort of stuff, and them having to wear disguises to get into the venue, like they had to wear the suits to blend in the last movie. There's all these, the IOU reference. Those are contextless, just we're doing the thing again. And I'm scratching my head how the movie... Did it land on that Mutz Cuts van thing accidentally? Because the rest of it is just repeating the joke from the first movie.
I think the gag they wrote was they think the van's going to be save the day and then the van immediately crashes. I'm not sure. I don't know, and I'd be happy to be wrong. Yep. But I think your compliment of it might be an accident.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think you might be right. I don't know. I don't want to say that with certainty. You never know the intent. You know, isn't it crazy, by the way, that this movie is 10 years old at this point? When I was going to watch it, I was like, this is what, this is like 4 or 5 years old now at this point? It's 10 years old. How did that happen? Where is all the time gone? Because at one point as well, I was sort of like double checking that this poor actress, what's her name? Rachel Melvin, who plays Penny. Delightful actress. I'll get into more details about her in a minute, but I Googled her quickly just to like find out who it was. And I saw her age and went, tell you what, she looks amazing. But I was like, oh no, 10 years. Like, she still looks amazing, obviously. I'm not trying to like say she looks, but like she's 38 now, I think. And I was like, wow, she looks really good for 38 if she's playing like an 18-year-old. Like, playing 20 years below your actual age is crazy. I'm like, oh no, she was playing 10 years below her age because because this movie is 10 years old now. Time is escaping me. But yeah, we'll talk. Do you want to get into that? Do you want to get into the whole Penny of it all?
Yeah, so we've not really... So to clarify, because we've not particularly done this, the movie is Harry and Lloyd are, as Dan said, there's a ridiculous thing, which I don't care for either, the catheter thing. Especially because people talk about that like it's the plot. I guess that's what I'm doing now, but you've just got to set up where they are. But I'm like, it's not... Anyway, fine. Lloyd's been pretending to be ill in a hospital of some kind for like 20 years. And then they basically end up going. So he reveals that's all a joke. Harry reveals that he needs a new kidney. They end up going back to Harry's adopted parents, who give him a box of stuff, which then leads them on the path, basically, to going on a road trip to look for Harry's long-lost daughter, so that she can give him a kidney.
Right. He needs, like, they go down the whole blood relative thing, basically.
Yeah, and on the way, they get mixed up in a bit of a seedier, more criminal exercise, like the first film, which I don't think you needed to do again, but anyway.
And in this case, it feels particularly forced. Like, it's not a terrible plot, it's fine, but it's like, it's really obvious where it's going from the minute it opens, and it's just not particularly engaging, I don't think.
Where the woman they think is Harry's daughter, which turns out not to be. Again, we're going into spoilers now. Her stepmom is trying to kill her father, the father who adopted her.
For money.
So, for money. And there's also a suitcase equivalent, which is really surplus, mm-hmm. Where there's basically a box which could save humanity that she's got with her to take to this conference, and they want to steal that as well. The stepmom and the, mm-hmm. and the stepmom's boyfriend.
Because you want to repeat... The suitcase and the box are the same thing. It's a mystery box. You don't know what's in it. It's something valuable. The bad guys want it. And then at a certain point, they do the same exact gag where when at the end you open it, half of what was in there is gone. What was in there in this case, they try to undercut it by going, what was in there wasn't actually important in the end. But what was in there was cupcakes and they've, like, Harry's eaten them. They might as well have done the IOU gag again. Like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So that's the plot of the movie. Now, a lot of the reviews that I looked at,
yes.
Blame and not blame, but point really harsh criticism to the character of and the performance of Rachel Melvin as Penny, the daughter. Right. Personally, I think that's all in the writing. I think the writing of the character is awful. They're not written to be a funny character.
Correct.
I think you don't need another character to be stupid. So the idea is that she takes after her father, who we think is her father, and she's exactly, because, you know, neither Harry or Lloyd are ditzy. They're just like, I guess in the movie terms, they're dumb, and basically they write Penny as a young female equivalent of those two, and it just feels off and seedy in parts. I mean, most things connected to this character feel seedy, but the writing in particular is really bad. And given the materials that she had, I think Rachel Melvin's her.
There's nothing else you can
do.
No, but I think
Rachel Melvin's delivering what she's been given well. Yeah. Like, she, you know, if the part is play a young teenage version of Harry and Lloyd, I don't see how anyone can deny that she's doing that. Like, I just think it's unfair to level the movie's failure at her, which some of the reviews tried to do.
It speaks to a certain amount of sexism, you know, when we sort of like we aim the criticism not at the men who wrote and directed it or the men who are starring in it, but some small side character that the men wrote poorly, and it's her performance that's the issue. It's not a surprise to me that this is how this turned out in terms of some of these reviews. I agree with you, 100% agree with you. She's doing the absolute best she can with that material. I've not seen her in anything else. I had a quick look down her IMDb. Actually, I must have seen her. She was in the Sleepy Hollow TV series. I don't recall her in that, but the fact that I don't recall her in that says she didn't like give a stinker of a performance. Apparently, she was in the Rake TV series for an episode as well, the American remake one. I didn't see that either, but like, so I've looked through her IMDb and I was like, I don't recognize anything else in here, so I can't really talk to her. She was in one episode of House. Anyway, so I probably have seen her in that too, but I don't recall her. My point is, because she's done a lot of these like one episodes of like procedurals, because she was also in Castle, which I've almost definitely seen. She had one episode of Heroes I've definitely seen, so there you go. Anyway, my point is, I'm sure she is a perfectly, you know, at absolute worst, she is a perfectly fine actress, I'm sure. And probably is even, you know, is much better than that. This isn't a way to judge her, though, because this material is absolute dirt. This is the absolute worst material anyone in this movie is given. By a country mile.
Yes.
By a country mile. And for critics to not be able to understand that there's an element of that character... it's the script, not just her performance, is embarrassing, if I'm being honest. Because, you know, if you're a professional critic, you should be able to, even if you don't particularly care for her performance, and, you know, maybe you've got a different opinion to Chris and I, and you think, actually, she's also delivering the material bad, you still can't deny the script is a large portion of this. A large portion of this. And why that character doesn't work. And then there's the CD element of it, which is Lloyd fancying her, which I just hate every minute of, top to bottom. It is gross, unnecessary.
Not just the Lloyd of it all, but the notion, like, she's in her underwear in front of a random guy because she's misinterpreted, if you get nervous, picture people in their underwear.
Yeah.
So she's like, she's misinterpreted that. Oh, God, so she's in her underwear. And you just go, well, what else does that mean? And she,
if anyone out there knows Rachel Melvin, could you just give her a hug and say, I'm sorry you went through that from me? She deserves better. Any actress deserves better. Anyone put in that position, that's awful. And look, maybe she fully agreed to it, thought it was funny, and was on board. And you know what? Power to you if that's the case. But it felt seedy. It felt it felt like Sarah in Chuck. That is a really specific reference to a character from a TV show called Chuck that they kept contriving extraordinary reasons for her to be barely clothed. And it was always seedy, and it was always it always felt like a desperate ratings grab to me.
It's amazing how much got through, how many films and TV shows got through the wire, got under the wire for that sort of shit, when Star Trek Into Darkness took such a battering for that scene. Now, that scene is gratuitous and unnecessary and all of those things.
Yeah.
But, like, you watch it and go, there's so many films or movies that have done this, but 10 times worse.
Yeah. Like, I don't love that moment myself. I think it's a weird sort of, I don't know, it's like a weird thing that happened in the wake of the first Transformers movie, I think. Where everyone seemed to feel like that was okay to just have a moment like that in your movie, because I felt like it was fading from movies when the first Transformers hit, and then it was like, oh, teenage boys will come see the movie if this is in the trailer, so we'll put it in the movie to put it in the trailer, and then, you know, we'll get the teenage boy vote, which I understand the thinking, but, like, Jesus, that's no, don't put the poor actress through it. Yeah. Sure. So it's definitely not a feminist movie. It's a white dude movie in the truest sense. It's full of. Is there any casual homophobia in this one? I actually don't think there is. Just racism.
No, there is. Racism. There's he at one point says that he told his parents he was gay, and they play that as like a joke. And Lloyd says he totally porked me for that van, and he undersold me, and he gave me less money or something like that. Right. So no, there is shit in there.
Yeah. I everything about this just doesn't work. I think I tell you what particularly was like gnawing at me as well, was there's a sequence that really extends this movie towards the end where they just run a succession of mistaken identity jokes, where there's like there's 20 minutes of the movie that feels like such bloat structurally, where they arrive at this conference, and instead of it just being there at the conference, they've made it to their destination, now let's do some antics at the destination, which is what the first movie did, but, like, it just goes on so long, it really holds the plot up. Because obviously the first movie, once they got to Aspen, you know, they do the thing where they're both dating the girl and, like, sort of, and, like, Harry gets his tongue stuck to the pole. The equivalent to that here is they're at the conference and Harry gets mistaken for this professor that's Penny's actual dad, because he says he's Penny's dad, and it leads to a whole case of mistaken identity, and they do a string of jokes that are basically the same gag where he says something stupid and people laugh because they think he's this genius guy, they think he's being sarcastic, I guess. It's not funny the first time they do it, it certainly isn't funny the 60th, and it does nothing but slow the movie down structurally as well. So the movie's got structural problems. Even though it's borrowed the mostly functional pacing and structure of the first movie, they've still got that wrong too. So fucking hell, yeah, it's a real mess. I don't know, did you find that stuff to be a big problem? Because you talked earlier about, like, you got towards what you thought was the end of the movie, looked and saw there's a lot more left. I imagine a lot of that is that stuff, right, from that point on.
Yeah, oh, completely it's that stuff. I think the movie, like I say, for me, and I don't disagree with anything you said about the opening at all. But the opening bothered me less, and like I say, to me, I was like, well, regardless, it's not good, but it does feel like a Dumb and Dumber sequel, like I've already said. So for me, it's really the real major turning point. It's that montage where it just feels like it's a different style of humor. It's Anchorman. It's all those things, and that, yeah, everything at the conference is just tedious, and I don't know how it goes from, like, the occasional line making me laugh to just everything feeling drawn out, unfunny, pointless, tedious. So yeah, I completely agree that everything at the conference is just awful. It goes from this isn't great, but there's the odd thing that's making me laugh, to just unwatchable. Yeah. It's just like, oh, and then there's like another 20 minutes after it's unwatchable.
Yeah,
mad.
I just comedy's moved on, and they didn't bring Dumb and Dumber with them, it seems, and I just feel like there probably was a way to do this right. I think I have thought of another joke that did make me laugh, though. I've remembered another moment.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I love it when he goes to visit his childhood home, and they get on the bike, and it, like, or in the car or something, and said, back on the road again, da-da-da-da-da, road, and it just stops, and it's like they've gone two doors down. And it's his childhood home. Yeah. That made me laugh.
And they do like three versions of that in the movie.
Yeah, yeah. Because,
like I say,
but that's the first one, so it isn't tired yet. So I laughed at that.
No, but I did really like the big montage, and then they just end up back with the same woman, and she's like, "No, guys," and she just turns
that's
the
return address.
Around.
Yeah, that's good. That's fun. And then they do like a play on that again later when they name the address wrong and they say the wrong one again, and someone's like, "That's not where you are right now." That made me laugh. I didn't laugh at it, but I remember not being completely offended by the joke that follows it, where Lloyd is like memories, a lot of memories on this street. Yeah, do you remember when we pulled up on the bike like a minute ago? Like, that's kind of funny. Or when we were doing cartwheels down the hill, and then you see the car rolling down the hill. That's fine. It's not great, but it's like functional. You might smile at it, or do that Bo Burnham, Burnham describes. You might breathe out of your nose. You might go, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I've just looked at quotes on IMDb. There is the odd good gag, like, it's like, this is, I'm his associate, Dr. Christmas. Ah, Christmas, like the holiday. No, like the tree. Like, that's all right. Like,
yeah, that's the problem, though. The hit rate is so poor. I would say if you could probably sift through this movie and maybe find, I don't know, 10% of the jokes function at best, and I'm being charitable, I think it's probably less. And that's bad. That's really bad. I mean, for a comedy to not be funny is a problem, in my opinion. And it is, I would say, on the whole, even if you want to be more generous than me and say it's closer to 30, 40% because you enjoy that first 20 minutes, it's still way more missed than hit. For sure, on the comedy, yeah. You know. And I think, at the very least, I was like, at least make me laugh. Like, you've broken the structure of the original. You've also copied the original, so there's nothing original or unique about this storyline. You're upsetting me with the Lloyd has a sort of, is lusting after this bloody basic child, like, basically a child, you know. You're repeating all these plot points. The structure is broken because it just really drags in the second act, like, you know, at the very least, if you're fucking all that stuff up, give me, like, at least a good couple of... give me a joke every couple of minutes that makes me smile, because then I could at least go, well, you know what? It's worth a laugh. None of the rest of the movie works, but you'll laugh a few times. But no. And I mean, to give an example of what we talked about earlier about how mean-spirited the movie is, because I think a lot of the jokes as well, like, might be structurally sound jokes, but they fall flat because of how mean-spirited they are. That happens quite a lot. Like, there's a lot of jokes about how Freda, who is the mother of the child, Penny, is, like, awful, ugly now. Awful. And, like, again, this poor actress, if someone knows her, maybe give her a hug, because they handed her a script that basically has the two lead characters make jokes about how, like, hideous and grotesque she is the entire movie. What is this? Kathleen Turner plays Freda as well. Kathleen Turner.
It's nuts, yeah. It's Kathleen Turner. It's crazy. It's Kathleen Turner. It's nuts. But I did like that they sort of, though, because they give her a good ending. Like, the actual ending, like, you take Harry and Lloyd out, the actual ending of Penny finding her mum, and then her mum kind of ending up hooking up and staying with her dad, her adoptive dad, and the idea of them becoming a family unit. I'm like, at least they took, you know, the 10 seconds to give them a happy ending, and give Freda in particular a happy ending. I thought that was good.
I agree. And can I ask you a quick question about that moment? Because I'm worried I missed something, and I never got a chance to go back and double check. At what point does Freda find out Penny is her daughter? Because I was watching the movie, and when she first sees her crying on the floor and goes over to her, I thought she was just helping a random lady that was in need, and it was actually quite sweet that she found her daughter that way. But then I didn't see any scene where she found that out, but she just sort of knew that a scene or two later that was her daughter. So, and I was like, oh, did you know the whole time, or have I missed a scene?
I thought that, but I believe, because I thought that at first and then went, well, maybe it's this. I believe when Harry's Jeff, isn't he?
Jeff Daniels.
Yeah. I believe when Harry leaves the voice note for Freda, which we see earlier on in the film,
he
says where they're going, and he also says, he says she's giving a big speech for her dad.
Right.
And Penny explains to Freda that I'm giving a speech to my dad, like, for my dad. So I believe Freda could make the connection. But the problem is, Freda doesn't really seem to react when she hears that.
Correct.
I'll check it. So, like, she doesn't have this big, oh, this is my daughter moment.
Yeah. And you know what this feels like? This feels like a problem that you sometimes will get with a script that's been written by multiple people that aren't working in the same room. Like, you know, when the script gets passed back and forth. Because it feels like there were two versions of this scene across the drafts. One version where she didn't know, and the sweet thing was that she just helped a random kid in need, and it was her daughter. And that's kind of lovely. It says something nice about Freda, and it's a sweet moment, right? That she reunited with her daughter by just being nice to a stranger. And I actually prefer that version, personally. But at some point, they were like, oh, but we need a scene where Freda finds out, and we've lost this scene later on. All right, let's try and make that so she already knows. Which spoils, I think, quite how sweet that was. Because now anything nice Freda does can be perceived as her being nice to her daughter. Which I think does detract from
the niceness.
Well,
she still goes up to her before Penny says that.
Right,
still
agreed.
Quite sweet.
Yes, but 100% agreed. But, like, a lot of, like, the things she's saying that are nice about and being supportive afterwards are clearly then after she knows. But because she doesn't react, because there isn't a... there wasn't, obviously, in the version of the script they then shot, there wasn't a, like, you know, a scene description that said, you know, when Penny goes, I'm giving a speech for my dad, you know, close up of Freda reacting, you know, she understands what this means or might mean, you know, like something like that, you know, that told the actress to react. So the actress plays it as without any moment of, you know, of realization. So you're both confused on a practical level of when she found this out, when she then reveals later on that she knows, and it slightly spoils the moment. Doesn't completely, as you said, she still chooses to go over and help her before she knows that. But she finds out pretty quickly. So, like, yeah, it's broken on that level too, which is a real shame, because it was again, a little glimmer of a better movie somewhere in there. Because Frida's one of the best characters in the movie, in my opinion. And performed brilliantly, by the way. Kathleen Turner really nails this. She's great in this role. Very funny. Her line delivery on the reason that joke really tickled you when they get back and she's like, it's the return address. It's because she delivers it absolutely expertly. I mean, the joke is fine on paper as well, but she really nails that. Like, she's very good in this movie, I think.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think she's great. And like you say, the poor woman, what she's being put through in terms of the lines and stuff is just upsetting.
Yeah, and again, who am I to say she didn't think that was hilarious herself and was willing to make fun of herself a bit, you know? Maybe, sure. But like the tattoo thing where she has to turn it upside down because, oh God, it's just, it's gross. It's really unfortunate. Yeah. Also, I saw the kidney gag coming a mile away, by the way.
Oh yeah, for sure.
The final reveal that he didn't need a kidney at all, ever. And when Harry, and Lloyd says, but I went and got it. Couldn't you tell me before I went and gave up my kidney? He's like, yeah, but timing. Now it's funnier. And it's like, oh yeah, that's a payoff to the opening of the movie, I guess. But yeah, it doesn't really work in my opinion.
Yeah, but Harry starts to embed there, because the movie kicks off because Harry's like, I'm not going to be around here. Oh no, they say that he knew he was faking later, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they do that flashback to him realizing that Lloyd was faking. Also, I think you could argue, and I don't know if I would have to go back and look at the first movie. And I'm running out of things to talk about, though, so we're moving on to trivia soon, I think, unless Chris has any other stuff he wants to cover. But you could argue the plot of this movie doesn't start until over halfway into the film. Like 45 minutes in, they get the MacGuffin and go on the journey. If you don't think your movie's got pacing issues when that's like your inciting incident and they're on the journey is 45 minutes into an hour and a half movie, come on. That is midway through Act 2. What are you doing? Just from a basic screenwriting perspective, what the fuck are you doing? Now, I think someone would defend that and say, oh, the journey starts when he goes looking for his daughter. But, like, it just feels like it stops and starts and stops and starts. And it feels like the real actual premise of the movie doesn't start until about halfway through. And I feel like we definitely could have gotten there quicker. But then again, if we got there quicker, we'd have probably done that by cutting out a bunch of the stuff that Chris actually preferred in this movie. So maybe we shouldn't have done that. Maybe that's the point at which the movie starts
I don't even know if it's preferred. Like, I found some of those gags funny, especially. And I think more of those gags are in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't even preferred. Just sort of defended in a well, it's not as bad as people say, and it is a true sequel. But then yeah, it just becomes indefensible. So yeah, you are, but I absolutely think this movie is still bad if you shave 40 minutes off of it, but you could easily shave 40 minutes off of it and at least would be going, well, it's a tight 80.
But it wouldn't even be that, though, because it's only an hour and a half, isn't it? It wouldn't even be if you shaved 40 minutes off this, that's half the runtime, is it not?
No, isn't it like... hold on, because I had it up to see if I could answer the whole... it is an hour and 49 minutes.
So it'd be two hours. No, if it's an hour and 49 minutes and you shaved 40 minutes off it, the movie ends at an hour and 10.
Yeah, I didn't know the exact... you know what I mean. I didn't know the exact numbers when I said that. But shave half an hour off of it then. You know what I mean? Shave something off of it, Dan. Yeah. It doesn't need to be 2 hours long.
No. Yeah, it's pretty long. I didn't mind his performance. The character's not great, but I did kind of like... Travis and his brother were kind of fun, I guess. And at least a different take on the sort of goon that comes traveling with them from the previous movie. Like, this guy is more capable and a little smarter and handles them a lot better than the guy from the first movie. You know, the one that was traveling with them to try and get the case back.
I think the problem is the gags where they're camouflaged, where he's gone to the most extreme lengths to camouflage himself, are great. As you've already said, great, a great bit. And I think the problem is, in memory, the character seems better because actually those are just two decent gags.
I liked that he was actually able to work on their level. There's the moment earlier in the movie when he uses the prank war they think they've drawn him into to his advantage. Like, he is actually, like... Mm. He understands very quickly how stupid they are. This is Travis. This is the initial Travis, not his brother, who does the camo later, which is both played by the same actor, Rob Riggle, who does a great job, by the way. It was so obvious that they were going to do that, by the way, because he mentions he has a brother really early in the movie, and he's also wearing the worst wig in the history of television and movies. And I was like, oh, so later on we'll meet the brother, and the brother won't have this awful wig. That's like the fakest hair I've ever seen in my life. So I knew the brother was coming into it. And because the brother was military, I was like, he'll have like really short cut hair and that's how you'll do it. But when the first Travis is traveling with them and he's getting into the prank war with them and stuff, I liked the way he sort of like got them with like, you know, by making them play the peanut game and stuff like that. And he was also like, you know, winding them up and getting his own back a little bit for what they'd done to him. But he was also like, that was also part of his plan to like get them out. You know, he's tricking them into taking them out, him, you know, out to somewhere where he can kill them. Like, that stuff's not terrible. I don't think that's a bad idea because it is a different take on what we had in the first movie where the guy just didn't know how to handle Harry and Lloyd at all and eventually just died as a result of this, you know, their idiocy. I like that Travis was a lot more like aware of what was going on and how to handle them. And it didn't work out, obviously. You know, he didn't realize he stopped on a train track, but that's kind of, you could put that down to dumb luck rather than like a bad plan. Like if that train hadn't come and they hadn't parked exactly where they parked, he'd have shot those two guys and he'd have been off with his cupcakes, you know? So yeah, I liked that they gave him a more competent villain, both in him and then his brother. Later on, that made for a slightly more tension, maybe, I guess. And I'm really stretching to give the movie a compliment here, by the way. I was just really digging just to try and be fair to the movie. So yeah, Travis is not a bad character. He functions mostly in the plot, and I don't mind Laurie Holden, by the way, as well, who plays Adele. She's like the sort of the stepmother to Penny that's secretly trying to kill the doctor. She's from Walking Dead, I believe.
Well, to be fair, it feels like her and the adoptive father, and even to be fair, okay, I'm gonna stretch and find a compliment here. Mm. It feels like everyone knows what movie they're in, at least. You know, sometimes, especially comedies, you watch a comedy, and she especially feels like she knows what movie she's in.
Yes,
and it feels like people are in different movies. Everyone's in the same movie with this one. Yeah. she I don't like the toe stuff because it's unnecessary. It doesn't tell us anything about the character. It feels like a let's be risque thing.
Let's be a little the perverts gross, what they want. Like it's supposed to be gross and funny. You're supposed to be looking at them and going like, how silly.
Yeah, but it's not that. Agreed.
It's supposed to be gross out humor, I think.
Maybe. Or I suppose. Yeah, you're right. She's great. But I don't really think anyone's delivering a bad performance. It's just the script is awful.
I do feel a little bit like Carrie and Daniels are not on form here, if I'm being honest.
I feel like they're not on form, but I don't think...
I guess when you're that talented, not being on form is still like pretty good. Like,
yeah. Well, and the there is still chemistry between them.
Yep.
There is still comedic timing.
Yep.
There's actually less of sort of the Jim Carrey moving his body for the sake of moving his body than there could have been. Like I do think if you went from one movie to the other, it would feel like the same characters and they wouldn't have really missed a beat. And like I say, the physicality of it, considering these guys are so much older, I thought was great. Like, you know, and you can tell that they're, you know, when Jeff Daniels throws himself in the road, you can tell it's Jeff Daniels throwing himself in the road.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the script is awful.
Yeah. Cause like, you're right. It's exactly it. Yeah. That's fair. One other quick little note that I've got just is that they do two sort of like fantasy sequences again. And again, just to put a button on how much this movie just repeats beats from the first one. If you remember the first one, the lady takes off her top and her breasts are replaced by like headlights. And then Lloyd wakes up and he's driving the car and there's headlights coming towards him because he's fallen asleep at the wheel. In this one, it's the same thing, only it's the front grill of a big truck. And then he's licking the truck. And then the trucker's like, what are you doing? Ha ha ha, same joke. Not good. Still not good. Well, it wasn't particularly funny in the first movie. It's not particularly funny here.
Very much an example of that bad nostalgia.
Yeah, yeah, right, 100%. Because, like, in the first one, like, I remember you weren't a big fan of the fantasy sequences, but I was like, they were really off the wall, and that's kind of like, you sort of go like, well, when else are you going to be able to do jokes like some of the jokes in that? But in this, even the fantasy sequences weren't crazy enough. Like, they didn't go far enough. Mm. They were pretty grounded, like, for what they were. You know, both characters cast the other as a, like, a dumb, smelly, like, useless person, which is kind of funny, I guess. But they didn't, like, have, like, nowhere near as crazy as the fantasy sequences from the first movie. So, yeah. I don't know.
Isn't there a bizarre, I assume, because I think I recognise her, the Harry's wife in Lloyd's fantasy is someone known, isn't it? That's a reference, right? To something?
Maybe I could look it up,
like a teen mum or like one of those type of things.
Let's see if I can. I don't have that in my triv, but I can. I'm sure it's in the triv. Let's have a look. Yeah, so it's someone called June Shannon plays Harry's trailer park wife. By the look of whatever this is, let me do. June, who is she, Shannon? I don't know who she is myself, and I can't find anything in the trivia. Oh, wait a second, though. Swamp Mama. Known for Swamp Mama, 2012.
Well, there you go.
I don't know what that is. Some sort of TV series.
Nope, me neither. Oh, but it sounds like one
wait,
of those.
Wait. It's a Honey Boo Boo thing.
Right, okay.
It's do you remember Honey Boo Boo? Do you remember that period of time?
Vaguely.
So it's something to do with that. Yeah, she played herself in some sort of trailer park reality show. So the idea is he's got her as a wife and she is someone. I see.
Right.
Yeah. She was part of the whole Honey Boo Boo reality show. So she was. I think she was in Here Comes Honey Boo Boo. And then she grew up and had another show called Swamp Mama years later.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So that's from that. Okay, so that's the joke. All right. Look, it's the movie sucks. I don't really want to talk about it anymore. Let's do the trivia.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah. You got to do your thing.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Let's triv it up!
I'm going to give you some trivia. Like, I like that this movie's so bad we don't even want to do our normal thing. Like, I have no excitement for this movie. There's not as much trivia because it's a newer film, but I'll cover it anyway. We'll blast it real quick. So Jim Carrey held out for many scene changes to be made before he'd agreed to sign on for this movie. So he had a lot of, like, things needed changing in the script. And even then, even when he got what he wanted, he still wasn't happy with it and actually nearly dropped out. He felt the producers, Warner Brothers, weren't particularly enthusiastic about the film. He did eventually decide to go ahead and rejoin the project, but Warner Brothers sort of proved him right that they weren't that enthusiastic about the film because they dropped it and then it was picked up by Red Granite Pictures and Universal Studios. So Warner Brothers were originally making this, and then someone else ended up picking it up. But that went through a bit of a long development history because it was obviously in the works for a long time. But even though he said yes eventually and had a good time filming it, he was still really... He's been on the record of being really disappointed with how the movie turned out. I put this in here because I just... The motive of the trivia writer sometimes is interesting. Jeff Daniels won his first Emmy the night before production began on Dumb and Dumber 2. What are you trying to say, person who wrote that piece of trivia?
I think he's trying to say that Jeff Daniels didn't need to do this movie.
The Farrelly brothers couldn't get in touch with Brady Blum, who reprised his role as Billy, the kid in the wheelchair that likes the birds. They eventually found him through Facebook and had him pulled him in for the sequel. But due to weird regulations, he did have to technically audition for the role. We didn't talk about that character. They brought him back. They did the same joke on a bigger scale. And it wasn't funny this time either.
It was really cruel again, but he's look for the amount of time in between. I can't really picture him from the first film, but I'm like, this kid looks young. like he's aging. Like he does.
He looks good. He does. You're right. You're exactly right. And you know what? I will say, actually, considering that the fact they had to find him on Facebook tells me he's not been acting in between, or at least he slowed down in more recent years, because they usually you'd reach out through agencies. So the fact that they had to get to him through Facebook tells me he probably hasn't done a lot. I've not verified that, but that sounds correct. Well, that seems correct based on that information. He's pretty good in this film. I think he has a lot of dialogue. He has a lot more dialogue in this movie than in the original one.
I think so, yeah. I agree.
Yeah, he's no picture on his IMDb page. He seems to have stopped acting before the 90s ended, it looks like. Here you go. So here are some roles from 2000s. He did a couple of small voice roles. He did Christopher Robin's voice in a couple of early thousands Winnie the Pooh things, but then he kind of, you know, stopped working and came back to do Dumb and Dumber 2. Good for him. He's good in the movie. I like the kid. So Karen Duffy declined to reprise her role as Shay from the first Dumb and Dumber. Eventually, she was replaced with Laurie Holden as the new female villain, Adele. I'm glad that. We didn't need to bring Shay back as well. There's already enough returning shit from the first movie.
Yeah, that would have been way too contrived.
Yeah. And it's nothing against that actress. She was great in the first movie, but just like, I just don't think you need that character from a story perspective. Apparently, Carey improvised most of his lines in the mental institution scenes at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, fine.
apparently, Jennifer Lawrence is a huge fan of the original movie and was originally...
Yes, I was hoping, because I remember this, but I don't know who she was meant to play. I remember she was meant to be in it, so I was hoping you would have more details on this.
Yeah, it's scarce. Basically, the word is that she was due to play Penny. Why that didn't end up happening, I do not know. Not enough money, maybe? 2014 is, you know, if I'm not wrong... Jennifer Lawrence was well in the throes of being... Yeah, 2014 is the year the Mockingjay Hunger Games film comes out. So she's well in the midst of being worth a huge amount of money. Mockingjay Part 1 came out that year. She was worth millions.
Well, she could have also read the script.
Yeah. Unclear if she either just wasn't being offered enough money or read the script. Absolutely. So yeah, there's not more detail, sadly, than I could dig up than that. But it was Penny she was going to play. I think she'd have been fine as Penny, but it wouldn't have fixed the problem because the problem is the script.
No, not at all.
Comedian and podcast host Chris Hardwick is actually a friend of director Peter Farrelly and was invited to do a cameo, but there was a misunderstanding between Chris and the crew and it didn't end up happening because Chris thought the invitation was just for a friendly visit to the set. I think he dodged a bullet, to be honest with you, but sure.
Well, I don't think it would have harmed his career, but yeah, I think it would have harmed Jennifer Lawrence's more if she'd have done it.
Yes. Yeah, agreed. This is an interesting one. So, apparently, Chris, there's the idea in this that Harry's parents are an Asian family and he was adopted contradicts Dumb and Dumber When Harry Met Lloyd from 2003, therefore making that technically
canon. Whoa. It's not Dumb and Dumber, is it, Dan? Say it properly.
Dumb and Dumberer.
Thank you.
You reply was a very David Beckham delivery on. Tell the truth. I could just see you peeking out from behind a wall. Tell the truth. Say it right. Dumb and Dumberer. Thank you. In the current movie, it's because his parents are Asian, but they weren't in DADWHML, as the fans refer to it. He was raised to adulthood by a Caucasian mother in that movie. So that technically means DAD-WHML is not canon. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's a Halloween 2 scenario, isn't it? They've done that, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a Terminator, Darker the Fates, whatever the fuck that film was called, thing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Which, you know, for a franchise with only two movies prior to this one is a bold move to have to do. I you know what? I wish it was Canon Dan, because then there'd been a little less racism in the movie. There you go.
That's a really good point. So no CGI at all was used for the full body paint gag with Rob Riggle to blend in with the various places, the brick wall, which I did see, I saw him in the brick wall almost immediately, but the hotel hallway one, when he's in front of the vending machine, is a fucking incredible thing. I genuinely went back and watched it again and was still like, where is he? And I knew where he was. It's very impressive. Apparently it took 6 hours to paint him in and blend him in accurately with the vending machine.
The fact there's no CGI in that is stunning.
Yeah, I love it. Did you catch, Chris, the post-credits scene?
No.
Chris, you are in for a treat. The post-credits scene. Have you got it in front of you? Can you look at it?
Yeah, I can. Yeah.
Oh, you should put it on. And I'm going to describe it. Well, let me know when you've got it in front of you and you're watching it, and I'll describe it to our listeners as you're watching.
Yeah, right, got it now.
Yeah, so they're on the Zamboni, and Harry and Lloyd are drinking their milkshakes that they've bought. And Harry's like, oh, I ordered chocolate, but they gave me vanilla. And Lloyd's like, oh, I ordered vanilla, but they gave me chocolate. These guys make mistakes like that all the time. And they throw the milkshakes behind them, and they hit the window of a van, which is being driven by the guy from the first movie that chased and beat up Lloyd a bunch. And then a big board drops down that says, Dumb and Dumber 4, coming summer 2034. And then, if you keep watching, have you gotten to it?
No, they're just about to throw the milkshake.
Okay, I'll let you see. No, I've got to let you see it. I want Chris's reaction to what happens after Dumb and Dumber 4 comes on screen. So I forget the name of the character, but it's the guy from the previous movie. Do I have the character? Chris just seen the thing I'm talking about.
Oh, that is brilliant.
Yeah, so the Travis's brother, played by Rob Riggle, once again pops out of the sign, having been hidden with paint. It's really good. It's very well done.
I was also chuckling. That whole thing, but again, right, so I like that, because I was also chuckling at four being spelt F-O-R.
F-O-R. Yes, yeah.
I enjoyed that. I also enjoyed them sort of acknowledging when Harry met Lloyd, or Dumb and Dumberer,
But even that's ridiculous, because this one's called two. So,
yeah. But again, though, because the milkshake gag.
Yeah.
The milkshake gag, very, you know, typical Dumb and Dumb affair, sure. Yeah. But that gag, and I know it's post-credit, so it's fine, but that feels like 22 Jump Street. Do you know what I mean? This is what I mean. It feels like they've tried to go, it's just another example of them copying the tone of a more recent comedy.
Right. But the thing is, what's really funny about that, though, is like the scene before that gag is a scene clearly cut from the movie where they're driving the Zamboni and they throw those milkshakes. That's from the middle of the movie. That's just a scene they cut and then went, oh, we'll stick that at the end because we want to post credits.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like, it's so weird. So weird.
Which is insane, by the way, because there's no, with the movie as long and bloated as it is, there's no reason to cut that scene. I would take that scene, even though it's got bad nostalgia.
Yeah.
I would take that scene over the montage and them going green any day.
Yeah, I think I agree. And it's worth noting that I think in that one, they didn't paint the guy to hide him in. I think that one is a CGI one. Because it's sort of...
Fair enough.
Yeah, for an end scene gag. But yeah, bizarre. So bizarre. I don't know why. We'll see. And I don't think this is even that clever thing, you know, because you talked about like Dumb and Dumber 4, even though like that's kind of weirdly involving when Harry met Lloyd, but not. Sorry, what was the acronym? I used the acronym already. DADWHML. So because it's but it's not a Spaceballs 3, the search for Spaceballs 2 situation where that's deliberate. It's just there isn't really a. I don't think there's quite as clean a gag for the title of a third movie, Dumb and Dumber 3, like there is for 4, F-O-R. So that's why that happened.
Anyway. Well, no. F-R-E-E. It's all... So,
yeah, I guess. Yeah, I guess you could do that. Maybe it was intentional. I don't know. In the film, Captain Lippincott is depicted as being Special Forces, but in reality, actor Rob Riggle is a former Marine who served in Kosovo and Afghanistan. So he brought, I guess he brought some real-world experience to that performance, which is interesting. A huge amount of marketing for this movie, quite amusingly, depicts Harry and Lloyd in the dog van from the first Dumb and Dumber. In the final film, it has less than 1 minute of screen time. That is funny. Would you like to hear about this movie's most interesting or funny cameo that you probably don't? You might already know, but you might not know.
I do know, but I would still like to hear about it.
Well, I don't know how it happened, because I couldn't find any information on this at all. But the character of Ice Pick, who is Harry's new roommate at the beginning of the movie, who is a guy in a full-on sort of Breaking Bad-style, you know, meth lab hazmat suit, is making meth in there. It turns out the man in that suit, whose face is never visible in the movie, is Bill Murray. Now, my only assumption is that the Farrelly brothers called that phone number that Bill Murray has instead of an agent, left a voicemail of, we want you to do the dumbest cameo of all time, and then he just showed up on set, and they did it.
Yeah, which I imagine. Bill Murray's played a corpse. I think this is...
Bill Murray played a corpse on Parks and Rec.
None of this is surprising.
No, no. That documentary on what a weirdo Bill Murray is really fun. The one where like they verify all those various stories of him just going around and doing weird shit. All right,
I haven't seen it.
I've done dumb trivia, but I've intentionally spelled it wrong. So here's just some trivia that's just about things that are dumb in the movie. The character name Frieda Felcher is based on the act of felching, which is a crude sexual act. I don't know what it is. Don't at me. I don't want to know. Before Harry and Lloyd get their van back, there's a marquee sign that says Hershey Squirts, which is an idea to invoke diarrhea. Hilarious. Dr. Meldman asks Lloyd if Dr. Pinchlow has Asperger's syndrome, which is obviously a developmental disorder. We know about that. People have issues socializing, communicating. Lloyd says, probably... I know he doesn't wipe right. Turns out the surname Pinchlow is actually a pun on pinching a loaf, which is obviously a slang term for defecating, is in the way that it's done here. The movie is dumb. That stuff being in the trivia is dumb. It's time for Cars Exist. Because I want to get out of here. I want to get out of here. That's how fast I want to get out of here. That's what I want. So, there's just one Cars Exist. It's the Hearst. The funeral coach that is driven by Harry and Lloyd. It's probably the most prominent vehicle in the movie, I would say. It's a 1972 Cadillac funeral coach. And there is nothing more interesting to say about that.
There we go. Dan.
Yeah.
Because I've got to assume...
Yep.
I've got to assume that you want to take us somewhere better. For next time,
which is like, so, Dad, when you look at the list of possible movies, by the way, not a lot of that on here.
Yeah. So there's some bad though. There's some risky. So if you want a definite, this is gonna be better. Tell me, Dad, are we watching Die Hard with a Vengeance or Hot Fuzz?
Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Thought it was, because I knew you wanted to pick it at some point, and I was like, well, surely this is the point where he's gonna go. Right, Die Hard.
It's gotta be. I can't do another bad sequel. Look, I looked through the list and I was like, Dr. Doolittle 2, fucking Jingle All the Way 2, like Men in Black 2, Predator 2, S Darko. Like the list of films we could technically cover, I'm like, no, thank you. But I will say the sequels that I think are like potentially like there are more than I thought that could be good. You know, Final Destination 2, I don't remember being terrible. Too Fast, Too Furious has I don't really remember it. Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey is a lot of fun.
After this you want a surefire categorical. Yeah. That's a good movie.
And I loved that.
So
Legends.
I think
I absolutely.
And you're only movie. Yeah. You're only two. We don't need to fear this at all. Because I agree with you. I think I remember enjoying Final Destination 2, but I wouldn't be confident enough to go.
Right.
It's definitely going to be a good time. Whereas those two are like, well, it's definitely going to be a good time.
Yeah, I'm almost certain Die Hard with a Vengeance will hold up. But we'll find out. And we'll talk more about that next week, obviously. In the meantime, of course, sorry this is a bit of a shorter one. I had so little to say about this movie. It's just, it's awful.
Look, Dan, I don't think... One, all the most of the reviews I saw online of this movie were 5 minutes. Let's be honest, I don't think this is a short one. I think our other episodes might be too long. In terms of two people reviewing Dumb and Dumber 2, I think an hour and 20 is fine.
Yeah, it's probably the longest review it's ever gotten.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my god, that's a real thought. Like, work. Genuinely, I don't think anyone has ever talked about this movie for as long as we have.
I think to be honest with you, mate, I'm not entirely sure the creatives talked about this movie for as long as we.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man, that's funny. So, with all of that said, we know where we're going next week. We're going to Die with a Vengeance. We're going to watch a good movie. But if you'd like to support what we do, and let me tell you, if there was ever a time to support me and just pick me up emotionally, it would be now. Because this sucked. Doing this sucked. And I don't want to go through it again. So, you can help us out in a few different ways. The obvious, patreon.com. You can give us, you can sort of support us with cash money, with moolah. What that does is that goes into the pot that covers our, like, you know, server fees and stuff like that. And then from there, obviously, you get access to episodes of this a week earlier, so you can hear Die Hard with a Vengeance right now if you go over to patreon.com. And also access to our Discord and also access to our bonus podcast, Nothing But Lyrics, where we take the lyrics of a song and we either make fun of it or just try to make sense of them, and sometimes a little bit of both. So that's always good fun. Otherwise, you can support us, of course, is by commenting, liking, subscribing on all the various platforms, whether it's the podcast version that's just fully audio on like iTunes, Spotify, all those places, or if you're heading over to YouTube and finding the video version of the podcast, which again, I've clarified before, but it's not a video of the podcast. It's just it's a YouTube video that has the podcast in it with a visual stuck over the top of a tape spinning around. In HD for some reason. I don't know how. For the first year of this, I think they were in 4K, the videos, because the rendering software I used was like just like standard set to like render in really high resolution. I was like, why are these files so big? Turns out I was rendering it in 4K. 4K just to watch that tape spin around, Chris. What do you reckon? Worth it?
Unnecessary, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think it still does like full HD, which is still, even that's unnecessary. But anyway, you can support us on there, comment, like, all that stuff. It's all good. All helps us out. Of course, you can keep listening. That supports us too. You can tell a friend. You got a friend who also felt very angry after watching Dumb and Dumber 2. You can send them our way and they can sort of get some catharsis. I even though I didn't enjoy doing this, I know factually that at some point someone is going to listen to this and be like relieved just to hear someone feel it. Because I've watched a bad movie in the past and been so frustrated with how bad it is. And I found, like, you know, Red Letter Media pulling it apart and just, like, had a real good time listening to them be like, this was shit and here's why. Because sometimes you just need that after you've suffered through a film like this. So maybe if you've got a friend who doesn't like this movie, you can pass it on and they can have that catharsis themselves. I have done it many a time myself. That's all the stuff. Obviously, yeah, you know, if you're not enjoying this, don't listen. We don't recommend listening to a podcast you're not enjoying. But otherwise, I think that's everything for this week. And Chris ends these, so I'm going to throw it over to him to do that.
Yeah. I've been Chris Billingham.
I've been Dan Doolan.
And this review has been Rewound.